Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on the nature of consciousness and life continuum as revealed to near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences. Some of the topics include what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communication, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature a stellar roster of special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. For more information about our organization, Toward the Light, on this radio program, please visit our website, towardthelight.org and towardthelight.info. I would like to make a special acknowledgement for everyone who showed up to the Edgar Cayce ARE Center yesterday to hear me give a presentation. And it was absolutely wonderful to have all of you joining us, both literally and in the spirit. It was a wonderful, wonderful turnout in spite of the fact that we were experiencing the aftermath of Hurricane Hanna, who sort of whipped through the area. So it was wonderful to have everyone join us. And we look forward to seeing all of you again. This week, I'm very pleased to have Paul Elder, who is the author of Eyes of an Angel, a multiple NDE as well, and one who's been through tremendous life-transforming experiences. So let us welcome to Toward the Light, Mr. Paul Elder. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Julia. Delighted to be with you.
Oh, it's lovely to have you with us on Toward the Light, and I've really been enjoying your book so much. It really, actually, as I was reading over it again today, I saw so many things in it that I actually brought up in yesterday's presentation at the ARE Center. And I was noting in the first chapter, you're actually talking about an out-of-body experience that you had, and you were actually having to make a serious decision about progressing into a more political arena, I guess, or career in your life. And your out-of-body experience really changed the direction of your life path. But also what I was noting in it is that it seemed, at least at the time of that experience, perhaps you had forgotten about your near-death experiences or hadn't made that correlation yet. So is that accurate assumption?
Well, I think, excuse me, I'm nursing a bit of a bug here. That one of the things about it, I mean, I'm a triple near-death experiencer, so a drowning when I was 12 years old, a car accident at 17, and a heart attack in the middle of a hockey game when I was playing when I was about 41.
Yes.
And each of those experiences were really profound and dramatic. The out-of-body experience occurred before the heart attack thing. And I think it was in response to a lot of some of the things that I was contemplating, and it was really, I think, a connection with spirit guidance telling me that getting into that form of party politics was not necessarily the plan that I was supposed to be on.
Mm.
And because it was really, really deliberating the wisdom of it. And so this came along, this remarkable life-changing experience, and I knew immediately that this was a message that that I shouldn't be messing with party politics and that there were other ways to affect change in the world. Now, when I was 12 years old and had this remarkable experience while drowning, when you're 12 and something incredible like that happens, you pretty much go on with life. A 12-year-old would think, gee, that was weird, and away you go, you know, and continue on. Because it was something that I knew that any time I tried to tell anyone else about the experience, their eyes would roll and they couldn't particularly appreciate what I was talking about, and including my family and parents. And so it was something, even though it, that particular particular experience had changed my life or changed my perception of life forever. I didn't give it a lot of thought or spiritual significance until much, much later in life, when I began to have spontaneous out-of-body experiences.
That probably also was due in part to the fact that you had a very rigid religious upbringing, and it seems, according to what I read here, is that the most of the community that you were living in was that sort of staunch, rigid Catholic mindset. And also, it was interesting to note that at the time, the perception or interpretation of reality, quote-unquote, was only what could be perceived through the five senses.
Right.
And so, my heart really went out to you and goes out to you and to anyone who unfortunately doesn't have much loving or compassionate or empathic supporting experiences around them with regards to family members and all of that sort of thing. It's interesting you were noting about, well, a 12-year-old goes through this experience and then carries on with life, and yet, for me, having been deathly ill throughout most of my childhood, it was more normal for me to indeed be out of body and to have these transcendent experiences rather than being in the physical plane. So it's very interesting, just depending on the individual, how one is going to perceive normalcy, as it were. But that is very interesting that you did end up having an out-of-body experience. And even though, if I'm remembering the chronology correctly, is that you had already read Monroe's book about out-of-body experiences, and you had kind of put that aside, and even whilst you were having all of these experiences within your out-of-body episode, you were questioning everything, and then you actually reread Monroe's book, and then things started to make more sense to you, if I'm remembering that correctly.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Well, when I, the first time I ever came upon the term out-of-body experience was in Robert Monroe's book, Journeys Out of the Body, and it was something of an international bestseller, and I read it through, and I had borrowed it from the library. I heard about it, and or a friend had recommended it, and I read it through, and I thought, well, this is very interesting, but this guy is a brick short of a load. And so I took it back to the library and didn't really give it much thought.
Now, what made you come to that conclusion, Paul?
What's that?
What made you come to that conclusion?
That it was a little dipped.
Yes.
Well, I think because it just seemed beyond the kind of reality that I was used to.
Okay.
In my world, growing up in a large farm family with 10 brothers and sisters, no less, on a poor farm, I mean, our reality was more like if you couldn't see it or feel it or taste it, don't believe it.
Right,
and,
yeah.
And so there was such a sort of a substantial physical kind of notion. And so any other thing, and even the belief in Catholicism and what we were taught, didn't lend itself to a form of spirituality which thought that you had a spirit body that you could float out of at any time. And so it, at that point in my life, although it was interesting to me, and I think that was because of the memory of of my near-death experience as a 12-year-old, I didn't want to, or perhaps I feared putting any faith in it. And so I kind of set it aside. And when I suddenly found myself floating at the ceiling of my bedroom 11 years later, that was one of the first things that came back to me, was the memory of reading Bob Monroe's book. And the thought occurred to me, hey, this guy wasn't crazy, this is real.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting because in yesterday's presentation, I was pretty much saying, if you can only see it, hear it, smell it, taste it, and touch it, then don't believe it. In other words, the five sensory world is really nothing but a hologram, and it's not reality at all. So as a result of all of these experiences that people like you and myself and literally countless others at this point have been having, and coupled with the research, we are finding out that just the opposite is true to what a lot of people have been told or taught about five sensory reality, quote. So, and even mentioning the fact that we've got to unlearn and be deprogrammed from what we've been conditioned to believe as real. So this is very powerful. So tell us about your now I take it, and did this out of body experience happen before your third near death experience?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Okay. And so this actually, I guess, was sort of like a major turning point in your life for changing the course of your life path. And so tell us a bit about that, how that impacted you and what you started working on or getting into after that.
Well, I think up until that point in my life, I had been a businessman and a local politician. In other words, I was on the city council. And I had been approached, and this is up in Canada.
Was it in Edmonton?
No, in the southern part of Saskatchewan.
Oh, in Saskatchewan, okay.
And I had been approached by the premier of the province to run for political office for the provincial legislature. And my ego thought that was a great idea. Wouldn't I be important? And so I had agreed to this, and almost immediately I began to question if this was something that I really wanted to do. I would be moving away or spending a lot of time away from my family and involved in party politics. And so I worried about it, and as the time drew nearer, the final nomination date, or D-Day, I became more and more concerned about whether this was the right thing to do. And this was at sort of the occurrence, and I'll describe this most profound experience that changed my life like no other. On this particular evening, it was at the end of a week, and it was like a Friday evening, and I think the nomination meeting for the party nomination was on Monday or something like that, and I went to bed rather late, and I was worried about, you know, debating this whole thing in my mind, and I fell asleep about 1:30, and the next thing I knew, I awoke, and I thought I had fallen on the floor somehow, because I could feel prickly things in my back. And it was such an odd feeling, and I thought, well, how can that be? How could I have fallen on the floor? And I opened my eyes, and I was in for a real shock, because I wasn't on the floor. I was floating at the ceiling and bouncing lightly like a balloon against the stipple in the ceiling. And it was the stipple that I was feeling poking my back. And this was such an amazing, shocking thing. And I could see down below me, and I could see my wife in bed and this other guy in bed. And I realized that it was me. And that was such a shock. And immediately it came back and said, oh, my God, this is real. This is true. And I thought of Bob Monroe. And I thought, maybe he wasn't crazy after all, because this is absolutely real. And I really struggled with that notion and just was totally amazed. And I knew that this was something that I had done hundreds, thousands of times. It seemed so natural. I was coming back from somewhere, but I didn't know from where. And so as I'm floating there, I'm thinking, gee, well, what should I do now? I guess I should get back in my body. And I didn't know exactly how to do that, but just by thinking about it, I began to float down towards my body, and unbelievably, somehow I missed and ended up floating, hovering about 2 feet off the floor and a couple of feet away horizontally from my body, floating there, looking over my left shoulder at my body laying on the bed. And that is such a startling thing, because we never ever see ourselves, other than in movies or photographs, we never see ourselves from the perspective of another human being, what other people would see. And I was so amazed at this, looking at my floating there, looking at my profile, thinking, you know, and it looked like I was sleeping, my mouth was hanging open, and I was thinking, oh my God, you look old. And just those concepts going through the mind. And it was such an astonishing thing, and I thought, well, gee, I think I have to get back in there. And so just by that thought, I floated across this space, and I could feel my skin and my arm, and as I reconnected inside my body, there was a sudden snapping sensation, a jerking sensation, and I was back and aware in my body. And I looked over at my night clock, and it said about 3:02 or something a.m., and every molecule in my body was on fire electronically. It was just this huge, incredible energy that swept through me from head to foot and in waves back and forth. It was such a remarkable, remarkable feeling. And I looked up at the ceiling with my open eyes, and I could see the stipple on the ceiling, but I could also see right through the ceiling, and I could see the stars in the sky. And it was so amazing.
So sort of like a superimposed photograph, I would venture to say, correct?
Yes. Yeah, mm-hmm. It was just a remarkable, you know, I can see through the ceiling. And I began to wonder if I couldn't do this again, because it was such an incredible thing. And I remembered some of the things that Robert Monroe had talked about. And so by just thinking about it, about wanting to float up into the air, this vibration inside me increased like a jet engine wrapping up. And so it was at a high speed, and then I slowly lifted off the bed. And there was a lot of noise that came with this, sort of internal noise. But as soon as I was away from my body, it was absolutely deadly quiet. And I floated up to the ceiling, thinking, gee, it's dark in here. It's such a human kind of thing. And wishing I could see better. And just by that thought, it was like suddenly a light came around me, and I could see my bedroom. And I'm floating at the ceiling of my bedroom thinking, well, gee, okay, now what should I do? Maybe I'll go floating through the house. I think I remember Bob Monroe doing that. And so I turned in midair, and I aimed towards the doorway of my bedroom. And I began to float towards the doorway. And I must have been going too quickly, because as I approached the doorway, the jamb over top of the doorway was too high. And the next thing I know, my head and my shoulders were going through the upper jamb over top of the doorway. And I actually closed my eyes and turned my head, because I knew I was going to crash into it. And I was so amazed when I simply floated right through it. And I could feel both layers of drywall, and I could feel the 2x4s in the wall. And I came through that, and I immediately began to float down to the carpet and the landing outside of the bedroom on this balcony. And looking back in total amazement, because I had just gone through a solid wall. And as I stood on the carpet, I could feel my feet sinking into the carpet, and I could feel the fibers of the carpet. And I began to feel the padding or underlay, and then the plywood floor, and I thought, oh my God, I'm sinking through this thing. But I wasn't concerned, and I looked back into my bedroom, and I could see now some 30 feet away where my body lay, and I could see myself in the bed. And I began to contemplate the possibilities of what this could possibly be. And I began to think, how is this possible that I'm over here thinking in total rationality, while my body and my brain, the thing that I'm supposed to use for thinking, is 30 feet away?
There you go, very good point.
And immediately there came a voice inside me, outside of me, I don't know where it is. And this voice said, you are not your brain, you're not your body, you're conscious living energy. and it just shocked me, and I spun around to see who it was or where. And of course, there was no one there. And the voice sounded so familiar, but it didn't really seem like my voice, my internal voice. And I began to contemplate all of these things that if I'm not my brain and I'm not my body, I'm conscious living energy, outside of it, then really, I tried to draw an analogy. We have this notion that our consciousness resides in our brain.
Uh-huh.
Sort of a Western notion.
It's a Western notion, for
yeah,
sure.
And it's totally false. I found that consciousness is not in the brain. Maybe it's a combination of the brain and the heart, but more so the heart, I think, than the brain. But more than that, I think that consciousness is outside of the body. The brain is like the computer, the hardware, and it really is just a relay system that transmits thought from outside of us. I think our thoughts do not originate in the brain. They originate in the aura around it, in our energy field, and it merely uses the brain to translate or to transmit that signal so that we can control our bodies or tell us to raise our arms or do whatever it is that we do.
That is so excellent, because that is exactly what I was sharing in the presentation yesterday. I mean, exactly. And it's so wonderful to hear different people saying, you know, bearing the same message. And I'm so excited about this, because it was something that I was really strongly emphasizing yesterday, that the brain is like the radio. It's a receiver. It's not the broadcaster.
Right. And I kind of liken it to a computer. So the brain is the hardware.
Exactly.
And the mind or the spirit is the software. And the software exists without the brain. Deprogramming is self-contained and exists beyond time and space. And we are connected literally with all other things in the universe. And you can't have an experience like this without contemplating your existence and what God is. Now, I had notions as a child growing up. I mean, I had a notion. I knew who Jesus Christ was. We were raised as Christians. And he sort of was a guy who looked like the painting on the wall in my mother's kitchen. And I kind of knew who God was. I mean, that was the stern-faced old guy with the gray beard in the Bible who was going to fry my butt in hell someday. And that is a completely wrong notion. And all of this downloads into our psyche, into our being. And I knew that those concepts are wrong. God is not a personal God that we can pray to on Saturday night to help us win bingo on Sunday. We have spirit guides. We have other beings, other helpers on this plane. And you can't have this experience without re-examining our new concepts of God and our relationship to it. And so over the years, I've had hundreds of out-of-body experiences. And it all came back to, and was taken on a tour through the afterlife with my spirit guides and re-educated as to who we are and why we come here and the reality of who we are as powerful spiritual beings. And I liken, if people ask, well, you know, what is God? Who is God? Where is God? And I kind of use an old simile, I think, that if consciousness, we are a part of all living consciousness, and it is that living consciousness collectively that is God. So if, as a simile, we were the ocean, or that living consciousness was the ocean, we are the individuated aspects of God, or individual drops in the ocean. And each one of us contains the DNA, or the blueprint, for the entire ocean. So in effect, collectively, we are God. We are the ones who designed this. We are the ones that, a great Hopi leader said, perhaps we are the ones that we've been waiting for.
And that's beautiful. That is absolutely beautiful and so true. And I think we're on a very powerful journey right now of true self-discovery and discovery of ourselves as a part of this pure light. This is wonderful. And go on, continue. I'm really pleased with what you're sharing.
So, thank you. Now, all of these things downloaded into my mind, or into my, excuse me, into my consciousness in seconds. And I understood the complexity of it and the beauty of it all. And it was such a remarkable revelation. But at some point I began to think, well, okay, now I'm still in this world here. And so I began to think about what I should be doing in this little out-of-body trip. And I'm standing at the top of the stairway, looking down into the second floor of this open foyer of my house. And I thought, okay, I'm going to float down, or will I have to walk down the stairs? And I reached out to steady myself at the pillar, or the railing beside the stairway. And I reached out and put my hand on it and pulled it toward me, and my hand just whooshed right through the post. And it was such a remarkable thing. And I did this several times, actually, because it was such a strange feeling. I could feel the roundness and the hardness of the oak wood, and if I pushed, I went right through it. So at some point, I broke away from this sort of mesmerizing distraction and decided that I would try to float down the stairs. And so just with the thought, this most amazing thing happened again, and I simply lifted off the air, into the air, and floated about 2 feet above the stairway, down to the bottom of the stairs. My toes touched the carpet in the landing, and just like that, instantly, I was back in my body. And the vibrations were gone, and I looked over at my clock, and it said something like 3:04 a.m. And I thought, my God, that seemed like an eternity had passed, but it was only 2 minutes. And there
you
was
make
that,
a couple of very, very
there was
good points here that you know about the fact that this was a thought, you could be somewhere.
Oh, totally.
And this is, you know, so many of us in the ears of and over ears have thought about this very thing happening, and then also the other thing is, you know, have so much happened. And just an instant of linear time, which really proves the fact that time as we experience on this plane really doesn't exist.
Well,
and you can experience an eternity in a few seconds.
Yeah. Well, I think because we need to remember. We've already experienced this. We already know who we are. And it's sort of like the eternal now, and so it's just that moment, that glimpse of reality, which we remember who we are. But one of the most significant things, when I got back into my body, there was this electronic, this snapping, jolting sensation. And I thought, oh my God, I know what that is. How many times, I do that every night, how many times do we have that jolt?
Yeah.
When we're falling asleep, as we're drifting off into the hypnagogic state, or watching, you can watch your kids or your spouses as they fall asleep and the jerking, and you can feel that happening yourself. And to realize, next time it happens, to pay attention to that, that is us, that is our energy body coming back into the physical body. So the next time we fall asleep and have that sensation, to sort of recognize that for what it is and say, oh my goodness, that was my energy body returning into my physical body.
That's a good point. That happened to me just a couple of nights ago, and typically what happens is that I will go into a deep trance and I have lots and lots of visions, and then suddenly there is that jolt. And I think you're very accurate in saying it, and I know you point this out in the book, that as a result of that you know, that we really do go out of body when we, when our bodies go to sleep.
Well,
we don't sleep, just our bodies do.
Right. I think the reality is, that we go out of body every single night. Now,
I think
we
so
might
too.
Just float nearby, 6 inches away or 2 feet away. for most of the night, but mostly we spend it on the other side.
Yes.
And we spend time with our group of souls and our loved ones on the other side, and we connect in those ways with our spiritual reality and sort of download and share, you know. And so over the years, I've had hundreds of out-of-body experiences, and now actually I'm a trainer at the Monroe Institute in Virginia. I live on Vancouver Island in Canada, but they fly me in several times a year to help out with their programs and teach classes there, especially remote viewing.
That's excellent. We'll have to visit the next time you come here to this area, because another thing that I'm very much into is remote viewing. Now, would you like to talk about that a little bit? When did you start getting into remote viewing?
Oh, my, that's been a long time. gosh, I think back perhaps before the world became aware of the American intelligence program of Stargate, I had been visiting... well, I'll just back up a little bit.
Sure, sure.
After the out-of-body experience that I had, next morning, it was so clear in my mind that it would be a huge mistake. This was a message to me that this wasn't the way I wanted my life to go in party politics. And so I phoned up the president of the party and I said, sorry, I can't do it. Won't happen. And thank you very much. And that was it. I went back to the library and I borrowed every book that I could on metaphysical subjects and Bob Monroe's books and other people's books and began to study about it. And I continued to have out-of-body experiences in the hundreds and eventually met my spirit guides and was taken on sort of a re-education, if you will, of through the afterlife or through the pre-life as to who we really are and the wonderful, powerful spirits that we are and how we interact in this world and how we form a part of all consciousness and how we are connected to every single thing in this universe. All consciousness. We have access to all consciousness and all understanding through our minds, through our auras. It's just a matter of focus. And so I found out that the Monroe Institute actually existed and that you could go there and take programs and learn about consciousness exploration. And so I began to do this in the late 80s. And the program or the American public became aware of this top secret program known as Stargate around 1996 when it somehow it was revealed and it came out into the public and major newspapers like the Chicago Tribune or the Washington Post, with New York Times had headlines like, you'll never believe what our government has been doing. They've been hiring psychics to spy. And the giggle factor set in, and the CIA and all the other government agencies sought to sort of distance themselves from the outfall of this particular program, even though the program had been running for 23 years and was extremely accurate and extremely successful in providing data and information to numerous agencies and intelligence agencies throughout the government. But a top-secret program is of little value if everybody knows about it, so the government disassociated themselves from it.
Well, what's so strange is that since time immemorial, all governments and rulers have used psychics and astrologers, and a lot of them, of course, obviously, have just kept it under wraps. But, forever and ever, they've been using...
I think we can know about this, but we don't want to actually be standing beside somebody who does it, or believe it. And so I found out about this program because of some of the things that the experiences that I had while I was at the Monroe Institute and some of the programs and the sessions that I spent in the lab. And I had no idea that this quiet lab technician, a guy by the name of Skip Atwater, who was just a very quiet, lovely soul. And he was a voice on the other end of the headphones while I was in the isolation chamber in the lab.
What did they call that?
Well, they call it a check unit, a controlled holistic environment.
Because I was thinking there was something that they do with the using the headphone, some kind of program they use.
Yes. I mean, through this process that the Monroe Institute actually patented through Robert Monroe's research, patented a process called hemispheric synchronization or hemisynchronization.
There we go. That's what I was thinking of. Yeah. Okay.
And this process is remarkable in that it can hold people. It can hold you just through stereo headphones. It can take you to a place between awake and asleep. That hypnagogic state, this pre-hypnagogic state, is like when you're falling asleep at night and the little dream images begin to form in your mind, but you're still awake. This process can actually hold you in that state indefinitely. And it's there in that fine, fine balance between awake and asleep that there are hundreds of levels of consciousness that we can explore.
Yes, indeed.
And that's what this process allows. And so it was sort of through experiences in the laboratory and the things that I described, and I had no idea who this fellow was, this very quiet, unassuming lab technician who I would talk to in the microphone and he would monitor my sessions. And I found out later on that this Skip Atwater, this quiet guy, was none other than Captain Fred Atwater, the now retired operations officer and recruiting officer for Project Stargate. The sort of the pioneer, the guy who kind of put the whole program together at the beginning, through the services of the Stanford Research Institute and the Monroe Institute of Technologies and all of these things, actually, was the guy who was responsible for this program. And so subsequently, I was introduced and met some other people that had been in the program, people like the civilian director of Stargate, Dale Graff, and I became friends over the years. And so I was introduced to some of these people and began training with the Stargate people, with David Morehouse and with Len Buchanan and, of course, with Skip Atwater and Dale Graff. And because of some of the experiences that I had, and this is one of the things that they found out in the program, in the Stargate program, and the extensive research that they had done on the abilities when they're recruiting and looking for people with this ability, they found out that people that had near-death experiences seemed to have an extra ability in remote viewing. And I think it makes sense because those people who've experienced that have already been to the other side. They have consciously been in that place, in that zone, that mental state, and are able to retrace it with a little bit of training. And so over the years, I've certainly done a tremendous amount of work and research in remote viewing and in other places of other areas of study, consciousness research, and have developed programs and ways of teaching people this process of how to focus our mind. If we are indeed connected to all information, to all other beings in the universe, how do we access that? And it's just a matter of learning how to focus our attention and relying on it. And it really works, and it is an amazing thing.
I wanted to ask you, are you familiar with Dr. Claude Swanson? He is a physicist and friend who's been on this show a couple of times, and he's the author of Synchronized Universe. And he actually worked with a number of these people, having been in the military, and he devoted a whole chapter, one of the first chapters in the book, as a matter of fact, to remote viewing. And he mentions all of these people that he did, so I was wondering if perhaps you were familiar with him. And you probably really enjoy and appreciate his book. In fact, his chapter on OBEs is actually on my website, toworddelight.org, under near-death studies. So he's great. I really love the work that he's done. And he, he'd come from a very linear sort of perspective on life, and then as a result of his research, kind of like you, he was feeling like, no, there's got to be more to all of this than meets the eye. And so he did an amazing amount of research and, you know, digging up these laboratory tests that had been done.
No, I wasn't familiar with him, but it sounds very interesting. I'll have to... You said Dr...
Dr. Claude Swanson, and you can find him on my website.
Oh, certainly.
As well, because I put all of my guests on my website. So, poordelight.org/ClaudeVSwanson. .html, and he's really great. I just love all of you, all of these people who are sharing this wonderful and profound message. I don't think we can say it too much to the world, you know, because I think it's really impacting people in a positive way and getting them to, you know, tap into the fact that we are compiled of infinite consciousness and light.
Mm-hmm.
And so as we, as individuals and as a group have these experiences, you know, it's just adding more substance to this truth.
Mm-hmm.
I think
you have to understand also that none of this came easy to me.
I'm sure.
15 years ago, I would not have believed a word I'm saying.
Wow.
I sort of literally was dragged kicking and screaming through these experiences, thinking this is impossible. And I think it's with that skeptical mind that I needed proof. And so oftentimes when that happened, my spirit guides or the guidance would provide sort of powerful proof to me so that I could believe it. And it's just sort of a remarkable journey for me in coming from a place of a very right or left-brained, linear universe, politician, businessman. I was a reporter for CTV Network in Canada. And kind of a very linear point of view about the world and the physical aspects of it. And so this is like a whole education, a whole new revelation to me that took me sort of kicking and screaming through this process. And of course now I understand the process, and it's a really amazing thing, and I think so many people that are into this or into exploration of consciousness will tell you that the more I learn, the less I seem to know.
Yes, true story.
It's like, you know, if I get an answer to a question, it opens up a million more questions, because if this is true, then how about this and this and this and this? And so I begin to understand the complexity that is so grand and so encompassing of how little we really know about ourselves.
You seem to seem to be perpetual students and cosmic university students here. And here I am in my 50s with these books all over the place and research and interviewing people and having discussions and reading and applying. And it's really, truly exciting to me. But I've iterated the same exact words. So the more I learn, the more the less I feel that I know. So many of us have said this very thing, and I think it's quite healthy, actually. Now, we've only got a few more minutes, and I wanted to also hear about your NDE at age 41, and this is, of course, after a lot of these out-of-body experiences that catapulted you into a new direction in your life. So are you up for sharing that, a little bit about that?
Oh, yes, very much so. And I'll just sort of, I think there's importance beyond the experience itself. There always has been for me. And I had a heart attack in the middle of a hockey game when I was playing, and I was about 41 years old. And I had been an athlete all my life. And essentially I died in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. And the pain was excruciating. In my left arm especially, not so much in my chest, but in my left elbow, I swear that I would have said, cut it off. I'll go without it because I cannot do this pain. And eventually, I mean, I drifted into unconsciousness and died and floated out of my body up into the ceiling of the ambulance. And I have to understand I'd had a couple of near-death out-of-body experiences by that time. So I was familiar to some degree with this, but now all of a sudden I'm floating up to the ceiling and I'm not in control. And it felt, it was different, the ascension up out of the body was different in that I felt sort of like a leaf in the wind. And I wasn't in control of it, and I just sort of waffled or floated up to the ceiling of the ambulance, and I could see the ambulance attendant, the young lady, adjusting the oxygen mask on my face and checking her watch and whether she was even aware that I had left at that time. And I began to consider, because the pain immediately was gone, and there was nothing but this wonderful, beautiful feeling of wholeness. And I knew that I was dying. I knew that this was very significant. And so immediately I found myself floating at the ceiling in my own home. And I could see my wife and my kids rushing around getting ready for church. And I remember that it was Sunday morning. And they didn't attend church often, so it was a meek. And I just floated there appreciating them. And it kind of, I guess I said my goodbyes to them, knowing that everything would be okay, that they'd be sad at first, but that life would evolve and everything would be all right the way it's supposed to be. And so having done that, I suddenly found myself floating back in the ceiling of the ambulance again. And I began to feel a pull. And it was like from the ambulance I was saying goodbye to my body, or thank you to my body. And I began to feel this pulling sensation, and soon I drifted through the ceiling of the ambulance, and I could feel the cloth interior of the ceiling of the ambulance, and I could feel the insulation, and then finally the metal surface as I went through the ceiling. And I floated down the street, about 20 feet above the ambulance, watching it roar through the streets toward the hospital. And I began to feel this magnetic pull, and everything began to turn gray, and pretty soon I was zooming along at a great speed. And I began to see this light, and there was nothing more that I wanted. This was so consuming, and that I was going home. And it reminded me, and some people may associate it with this. I remember the movie E.T. when E.T. was ill and in sort of a coffin-like box, and when the spaceship came back, and he suddenly lit up again with delight, saying, home, home, home. And that's the feeling that I had, that I was going home. And the next thing I know is this sort of explosion inside my consciousness, and I'm back inside the hospital. And the doctors have my shirt open and pushing needles into me, and I'm back, and the pain is there and everything else. But
so you were now back in your body, correct?
Yes. But
okay.
After that, I felt I didn't want to be back at all. The pain was awful and eventually occurred. But I didn't want to be back. And I felt kind of ripped off because I'd heard and read about people that have these past life views and fantastic experiences on the other side, and I didn't get to that. And so a short time later, my spirit guides identified this yearning inside me and took me through a life review. And I experienced the same as I would have had I passed over. And I want to tell you a couple of things about it because it was such a remarkable, absolutely life-changing experience. We have this notion of punishment and retribution. There was no such thing. God does not punish. We are God. God only loves. And that's we ourselves. And so every single one of us will have this experience when we die. We will go through a life review. And I want to tell you about that because it may be similar to some of the reports that you've read. And it does seem sort of like watching a photograph album fan through your mind, or a videotape, if you will. And you know that at any time you can stop it and examine it. And I'm going to tell you about a couple of episodes in it. And only because it was the first sort of episode that I actually stopped and re-examined it. And it returned me to when I was probably 10 or 12 years old in the schoolyard. And there was this obnoxious kid who was always a pain in the butt. Probably just very, feeling very inferior. And so became overly in people's faces. And it was one of these, you just want to, you know, whack him in the head, you know. And I'm standing beside the school building, and this kid's got a basketball, and from 3 feet away from me, he suddenly threw it in my face and said, catch. And it whacked me in the nose, and I'm 12 years old, and I got tears in my eyes, and somebody's going to pay. And I knocked this kid down, and I sat on him. I'd had it with him, and I was going to wail on him. And I couldn't do it. I experienced every single emotion, every single notion and thought that I have. I was living this again. I experienced all of my feelings. And then something happened, and I became this kid, and I experienced every single thing that this kid experienced. His humiliation and pain, because now he had a bloody nose, and he had tears in his eyes, and he was crying, and all of these things, and his regret at doing this, and it was such a painful, painful thing. And I knew, I knew that I don't need Jesus Christ to judge me, or God to judge me. This kid was judging me. I was judging me. And I just knew that we will experience every single thing in our connections to other spirits. And I don't want people to be, because we all do stuff in our life that we're going to regret, or we will regret, or may regret. And it's not like that. I mean, when you view it from a spiritual perspective, it's like you can watch it and go, oh, I didn't know that. Wow. And I want to tell you that, you know, this is a most wonderful experience. And I'll go to the other end of this experience, where many, many years later, I'm the mayor of, you know, of the city. And this was just another experience where I stopped and reexamined it. And this was something that happened that was so innocuous I did not remember it. And one particular, we had this fella in town who was rumored to be an abuser, that he beat his wife and he was an alcoholic and so on. And one morning I stepped out of City Hall and virtually ran into the guy. And I just talked him up. And this isn't his real name, but I'll call him Mr. Dirksen. And I'm sort of like, you know, good morning, Mr. Dirksen. How are you? How's the wife? How's the kids? And I just chatted with him for a couple of minutes. And this meant nothing to me. This was such an innocuous thing, and on I went about my life and my day. But this had an effect on Mr. Dirksen. And it goes like this. So maybe on this particular day, Mr. Dirksen felt better about himself. And so maybe on this day, he didn't go home and beat up his wife or get drunk. And maybe on this day, Mrs. Dirksen didn't take it out on the kids. And maybe on this day, the kids didn't take it out on their friends in the schoolyard. And I began to see the effect that this simple, innocuous act of kindness had on so many people and how important it was. And so I went through the complete life review until the chronological timing of my return at the heart attack. And this was the most profound message of all of the things that I've learned on the other side, is that when we finally pass over, when we leave our bodies behind, it won't matter one little bit who won or who lost or how rich or famous or important we became. The only thing that will ever matter is how we treated other souls along the way. That is so important. And that's the only thing that will matter.
Wow, Paul, that is so wonderful. And That's a really, really good point too. In this transmission of Toward the Light on, it's a wonderful point for people to ponder and to remember. Thank you deeply for all of the wonderful things that you've shared with us this hour. It's really, really tremendous. And we'll certainly have to have you back, and I look forward to seeing you whenever you do return to Virginia. That would be really, really lovely. We've been speaking with Mr. Paul Elder, who is the author of Eyes of an Angel, a three-time near-death experiencer, and one who's had multiple out-of-body experiences and learning great, great lessons as a result. And thank you once again for joining us. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you that it is only with a heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Next week, we're going to have Mr. Matthew Deleuze back with us on Toward the Light. He's a friend from the same part of Britain that I'm from Lancashire, and he's also had a near-death experience and a lot of out-of-body experiences. And he's going to share his story with us next week, so I hope you'll join us. And again, I want to remind you that only love prevails. True story, only love prevails. So do join us next week for another transmission of Talk of Light. Thank you for joining us. Love and blessings to all of you. We will speak to you next week.